Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of the O'Leary Partners Observations, aka the OPO Podcast, which is a series of one-of-a-kind observations provoking aha moments for your personal or professional life from influential Floridian professionals, top healthcare physicians, and UBS thought leaders or partners from our orbit. I'm your host, Gabrielle O'Leary, a Senior Wealth Strategy Associate for the O'Leary Partners at UBS Private Wealth Management. I'm located in Miami, Florida, and I can be reached at 212-626-8735 or gabrielle.oleary@ubs.com. Our special guest here today is Jonathan George, partner at George Citron & Co. CPA. Jonathan, thank you very much for joining me here today for our Tax and Accounting Insights in a Post-Election Landscape episode. To give the audience a brief agenda, in today's episode, we're going to cover a few key areas. First, we'll start with an overview of the election results and what that could mean specifically for tax and accounting policies. From there, we'll dive into potential tax policy changes that may impact everyone, from everyday taxpayers to high net worth individuals. Then we'll focus on estate and gift tax planning, discussing how current and proposed policies could shape wealth transfer strategies. And lastly, we'll take a look at corporate and business tax implications, exploring how companies of all sizes might need to adjust in response to evolving regulations. And our goal here this afternoon is to give you a clear, practical look at what's ahead, so you can make informed decisions for yourself, your family, or for your business. So let's get started here. To help our audience make more informed tax and accounting decisions, I couldn't think of anyone better to join us than a true tax expert. So I'm thrilled to welcome Jonathan George to the OPO Podcast. Jonathan, if you'd like to say hello.
Thank you very much for having me, Gabrielle. It's a pleasure. Hello.
The pleasure is all mine. Great. So just to give everyone a quick overview of his background, Jonathan is a licensed CPA based in Coral Gables, Florida, and he has over 12 years of experience in public accounting. He works with small to mid-sized corporations and high net worth of individuals across the spectrum of industries, whether it's real estate, manufacturing, retail, and consumer products. Specifically, Jonathan specializes in tax and business consulting, where he provides comprehensive guidance on complex tax matters, such as international and multi-state income taxation. Essentially, his expertise helps clients navigate the ever-evolving tax landscape effectively, and we're lucky to have him here to help us simplify the post-election landscape today. So, Jonathan, thanks so much for making time for us this afternoon.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
So let's get into it. I think you can agree with me, Jonathan, that the last few weeks have been quite the whirlwind with the 2024 U.S. presidential election in the spotlight. But regardless of the outcome, it's really important to consider the long-term implications, particularly for financial planning. And at UBS, we've been hearing a lot of speculation about how a Trump presidency could potentially influence tax policy. During the campaign trail, we noticed that Trump's proposals would likely follow the framework of his previous administration. And what I mean by that is focusing on reducing or extending tax burdens for individuals, families, and businesses. However, the extent of these changes depends on the political climate and would need congressional cooperation. And with federal deficit as a share of GDP now double what it was at the start of Trump's first term, and then you also have the elephant in the room, right? Interest rates are significantly elevated. Fiscal conservatives might push back against policies that could further inflate the deficit. And this type of resistance could lead to potential scaled back or even blocked fiscal legislation. But as we move forward, we think that keeping an eye on personnel decisions, like the nomination for Treasury Secretary, could give us some clues about fiscal priorities and how these policies are implemented, such as the timing and order of tax cuts versus tariffs, could have a big impact on the markets. And for context, tax cuts tend to be viewed favorably, yes, while tariffs often have the opposite effect, since they're usually inflationary. Bottom line, with this shift in political leadership with a red sweep, we think that individuals, families, and business owners may need to rethink their wealth management, estate planning, and overall tax strategies. Jonathan, from your perspective, how do you think election outcomes typically impact tax and financial landscape for high net worth individuals?
Well, every 4 years, there's anxiety, there's uncertainty, And the most affected are going to be the high net worth individuals. They have the most to gain and most to lose. Republican policies tend to provide cuts, exemptions, et cetera, across the board, benefiting most tax brackets, not just imposing tax on the high net worth individuals. And that's regarding income tax and capital gains. The policies for those two are very similar to the income tax policies for those two. Democrat policies are more geared towards taxing the high net worth individuals, and Republican policies are going to be more tax breaks, exemptions, tax reductions, et cetera, across the board, both for income tax and capital gains. So given those two, I guess I would say that it's a big swing, right? We have a lot up in the air. We have the expiration of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. We have Trump's proposed policies and then our current policies. So there's a lot going on right now.
So those are some really interesting points about personal income and capital gains taxes. And I think it's really fascinating to think about how those two factors could ripple through the broader market. On one hand, you have lower income and capital gains taxes tend to drive growth as they historically encourage more investment. They boost consumer spending and increase corporate profitability. I believe it's overall a good thing for the economy, to your points earlier, and could really propel the stock market potentially. But it's not all smooth sailing. These are the kind of tax cuts that could also create some short-term volatility as investors react to the new landscape. For example, at UBS, we think that if it looks likely that there will be new tax cuts in addition to extending the expiring personal tax cuts, then investor concerns about ballooning deficits could push treasury yields towards 5% or beyond. I think that changes in corporate earnings, shifts in government spending, or overall adjustments to the economy can keep things a little unpredictable at first. It's definitely a dynamic situation that could have both exciting opportunities, but also potential risks. So with that in mind, Jonathan, given the recent election, what are you seeing in terms of more initial reactions or shifts amongst your clients?
Estate planning changes. Again, capital gains is a big item, whether we should realize those now or postpone. And overall, I would say in times of uncertainty, which we are in right now, we have the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that's set to expire. So that's something that we can like base our strategy on. But we have all these other things up in the air as far as the Trump change. So I would say that a rule of thumb in times of uncertainty is to kind of hedge and diversify investments, whether those are businesses, stocks, securities, et cetera. I think the idea is to, I guess, until the pieces fall, we have to diversify and be prepared for it to go one way or the other.
Thanks for sharing those initial reactions and insights. And I agree with you. There's absolutely a lot of uncertainty and anticipation in the air, especially amongst high net worth individuals. And with the potential for major tax policy changes under a Trump presidency, we're finding that many are questioning how these new proposals could impact their wealth management strategies. From a financial advisor perspective, we're seeing asset allocation take center stage. And when clients have more disposable income, we're seeing a trend that they're more willing to take on higher risk investments like equities or maybe even consider alternative assets to take advantage of proposed favorable tax treatments. And this reflects sentiment that there's perhaps growing market optimism and confidence. Also, I think it's important to note that many investors who were sitting on cash before Election Day are now deploying it into the markets. Specifically, U.S. equity funds saw a massive $37.37 billion inflow in 1 week post-election. This is the largest since January 2014. But the surge isn't just about lower taxes, right? It's fueled by expectations of more lenient regulations and increased consolidation across industries through mergers and acquisitions. And with the combination of these factors, we think that could create a sense of opportunity that's really pulling those sideline investors back into the game. So with that in mind, let's dive deeper into the specifics. What tax changes do you expect could impact high net worth individuals the most under a Trump administration?
I would say it's going to be, again, regarding income tax, capital gains tax, and the big one now is the estate tax. So under the expiration of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, I'll refer to it going forward as TCJA. The individual tax rate is set to go from 37 to 39. The estate exemption, this is the big one, is set to go from 12.92, the exemption for filing an estate. 12.92 million is going to be reduced down to 6 million at the end of 2025. That is huge. The corporate tax rate was made 21%, and that's permanent in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So that's going to stay the same. So now that is something that we know is going to happen, unless something else happens before that. In addition to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act expiration, Trump has his own proposed policy changes. And I will touch on the income, capital, and estate tax. So Trump's policy or proposed policy is to decrease from 7 brackets down to 3. And those would be 15, 25, and 35%. And that would benefit everyone across the board, even high net worth individuals. As far as capital gains goes, so the way it works right now with capital gains under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, capital gains rates are the same as they were prior to, but they are not indexed to your ordinary income rate. So as an example, I'll show you what that means. Pre-Tax Cuts and Jobs Act and post-Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, capital gains were linked to your individual income tax rate. So a high net worth individual with $10,000 in capital gains is going to pay more capital gains tax than a person who is not making as much money on the same $10,000. I guess to explain it a little better is I make $100,000 in capital gains and someone else makes $100,000 in capital gains, but I have $1 million W-2 and they have a $50,000 W-2. As it currently is right now, we'll pay the same tax on that capital gains. But once the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act expires, I will be paying significantly more tax on those capital gains because it's indexed to my ordinary income tax rate. So that's a big thing, right? As it is right now, you can save on capital gains if you're a high net worth individual. Post Tax Cuts and Jobs Act expiring, that's not going to be the case. Okay. And then as far as the estate and gift tax is concerned, Trump's actually proposing to eliminate it altogether. That's not set in stone. What is set in stone is going to be reduced to 6 million. So what do we plan for? We plan for what's set in stone. If Trump does eliminate the estate and gift tax, that's going to very much affect capital gains tax. Because if heirs are not getting a stepped up basis from the decedent's property, they're going to most likely get a carryover basis of the decedent's cost. And when the heirs ultimately sell that property or whatever it may be, they're going to have a very low cost basis compared to what they would have had under the estate tax rules, getting a step up to fair market value basis.
Those points about potential tax changes really shine a light on what's at stake for investors, and there's certainly a lot to unpack there. It's not just about understanding what might change, but also knowing how to prepare. And I think that capital gains are the perfect example for this. And we think that there's two sides to every coin. So let's say the TCJA is renewed and capital gains taxes are reduced. In this scenario, investors might be more willing to sell appreciated assets since the tax burden would be lighter, potentially boosting trading volumes and market liquidity. But on the flip side, lower taxes could encourage long-term holding as investors would get to keep a bigger piece of the pie, which could bring greater stability to stock prices by reducing that knee-jerk selling during market swings. But for those that are aiming to stay ahead, having those proactive strategies in place that you just mentioned, Jonathan, I really think makes all the difference. So let's take a closer look. Jonathan, are there particular areas where clients should be proactive in response to these potential changes?
Yeah, absolutely. As I mentioned, we plan for what is known and what is set to happen by Congress, right? So we know that the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is going to expire on December 31st, 2025. So the idea would be to accelerate income and recognize it now because we're not sure if the capital gains or income tax is going to go up. Right? There's uncertainty. Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is going to expire, but Trump may do something. But what we do know now is that we have a lower capital gains and income tax bracket than when the TCJA is going to expire. So it would be prudent to accelerate income into current period or prior to the expiration of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So that would be if you're looking to buy equipment for your business, maybe it's good to take advantage of it before 2024 finishes. You get the bonus depreciation, 80%. It's going down to 60% next year, 40, and then 20 in the following years. Roth conversion is another idea, right? You pay the tax on the conversion now, in the lower income year. Next year, you already did it. You don't have to deal with it. Estate planning, essentially, that's probably the biggest one. Somebody with a $7 million estate had no concern of estate tax filing or an estate income tax return. Estate tax return, not estate income tax return. Now they are on the hook for that. So maybe utilizing irrevocable trusts to remove assets from your estate. There are different vehicles that allow that. And while they allow the grantor to still maintain some control over the trust, while still getting the trust out of the estate and reducing the estate's gross value below the filing requirement and needing to pay an estate tax.
That's an interesting point of view where clients should stay proactive with these potential changes. And while being proactive is key, and I feel like a broken record saying that again, it's also really important to understand the timeline for these changes to actually take effect. So let's talk about another critical aspect. How long does it typically take for policy changes to impact individual planning? And what should clients expect during that transition period?
So there's three main ones, right? There's specified effective dates. Example of that would be the expiration of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. There's also immediate and phased out rollouts, like, for example, the reduction in the bonus depreciation expense. You see, it goes from 100%, 80, 60, 40, 20, and in those amount of years, 5 or 6 years, is being phased down. And then there is what we're discussing right now as far as like proposed changes, right? What's not set in stone, but what is proposed? What's stuck in Congress right now being worked on? So you have a specified date. You can definitely plan for that. Immediate and phased out rollouts. Those are set in stone. You can plan for those. Complex legislative processes sometimes delay or leave uncertainty, where it goes back to my first point regarding just being prepared for up or down changes, positive or negative changes, and having a diversification. Don't have all your eggs in one basket.
Those are all valid points, and I absolutely appreciate the breakdown. Let's continue on that tangent of estate and gift tax planning. At UBS, we believe that estate planning isn't just about managing wealth, right? It's about protecting a legacy that's especially critical as we embark on a new political landscape. I realize that Trump has previously supported repealing or reducing estate taxes, to your comments earlier, Jonathan. So it is possible that his administration could either extend the higher exemptions or introduce broader changes. That could add new complexities to the planning process, making it even more important to stay ahead of potential changes. And here's another staggering thought. Even though Halloween is behind us, I'd like the audience to consider this a spooky statistic. 70% of families lose their wealth by the second generation, and 90% of families lose it by the third. The culprit, you may be wondering? Two words. Poor planning. This highlights the importance of strategies that ensure assets are protected and passed on effectively. So, Jonathan, with this in mind, what do you see as the major considerations for estate planning right now?
The major consideration is the exemption going from 12.9 to $6 million at the end of 2025. That is going to capture, I don't know the exact statistics, but if you can think about it, if the exemption was 12 million around that, now it's six, you're going to capture a whole lot more people in that estate tax. So that's set to happen. If Trump eliminates the estate tax, that would be great for estate tax, but it would also increase capital gains tax, as we discussed prior. So I'll touch on more what's going to happen, right, with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act expiration. As I mentioned, there's different ways to reduce your estate, gifts to trusts, et cetera. I'll go into a little more detail on the mechanics of it, but essentially, regarding gifts, you can essentially gift out of your estate, right? So a gift will take it out of your estate, but it will eat into your exemption. Essentially meaning if I have an exemption of $12 million and I make a gift of $5 million, I now have a $7 million remaining exemption, right? So for example, 0.9 exemption right now, and I have $10 million in my estate. And I say, well, let me create an irrevocable trust, name my kids or anyone else's beneficiaries. And I want to put $6 million in that trust, right? Now I'm left with a $4 million estate, and now I'm back under the new $6 million exemption, right? I was able to take advantage of the current law, which was a $12 million exemption. And now when the $6 million exemption is imposed, I'm already under it. So I plan properly for it. And there's a couple of ways you can do it, right? Say irrevocable trusts, not revocable. As a revocable trust will not remove assets from your estate. Revocable trusts are more for probate, avoiding probate and administrative things upon passing. So I'll talk about two of them. These are just two that I decided to talk about. There are several others. And any of these, I would say, if you're going to discuss any of these, it's very prudent to talk to an estate attorney who's versed in estate tax. Because there are estate attorneys and trust attorneys who, with a $12 million exemption, they're not dealing with too many people that have to deal with the estate tax. So you want to talk to somebody who had to have dealt with estate tax before. Because like I said, they're not even in the realm to consider any dealings with estate tax, because the estates that they're dealing with are probably a little lower. But that being said, there's something called a grantor retained annuity trust, which is a grat. In a grat, the grantor transfers assets to the trust, and in return, they're able to receive an annuity that's based on fair market value of whatever they put in the trust. They're able to retain an income stream from the trust. The intentionally defective grantor trust, essentially, it's an irrevocable trust. It gets the assets out of your estate. But what it allows to do, essentially, the grantor is able to dictate certain terms when it comes to filing tax returns. Typically, a grantor trust, for the most part, a revocable trust, is going to be included on the grantor's income tax return. It's not going to file its own, because in a grantor trust, the grantor still owns, right? It's still in their estate. They own it. So in an non-grantor trust or irrevocable trust, they have to file their own tax return. It's like its own entity because it has control of the assets. The grantor no longer is in control. So with the intentionally defective grantor trust, it allows the grantor to still pick up the income and deductions from the trust. They file that on their own tax return while still maintaining an irrevocable trust status.
Perfect. That definitely gives us some food for thought, along with some creative steps families can take to optimize their situation. This is imperative because I recently read a statistic from the survey of Wealth Management Institute, which found that 58% of families haven't updated their estate plan in the last 5 years. It's a striking statistic given how quickly regulations can change. It truly underscores the importance of treating estate planning as more of an ongoing process than a one and done or one time event. So at this point, I think we've had a solid discussion so far on the potential tax policy changes and estate and gift tax planning. Now let's transition to another equally important topic for our business owner listeners: the implications of favorable tax policies on business and private clients with significant business interests. From a financial advisor perspective, I want to take a minute or two to peel back the layers on this topic. When businesses experience lower corporate taxes, their profitability often increases significantly. With more resources available, companies can reinvest in their operations, bring on new employees, or even expand into new markets. This kind of growth can lead to stronger corporate earnings, which might also serve as a catalyst for improved stock market performance. But our team believes that certain sectors are likely to feel the impact of these proposed changes more than others. For example, areas like consumer discretionary, technology, industrials, and financial services might see a significant benefit from tax cuts. Companies with high capital expenditures or a focus on research and development, like those in tech and industrials, might even experience a greater boost due to the fact that they're retaining more earnings, which could drive growth and innovation. On the other hand, sectors with more stable, regulated earnings, like utilities and telecom, may see fewer immediate gains, but they still have the opportunity to adapt and stay competitive. Jonathan, as we dive deeper into this, what potential changes in corporate taxes or business-related policies should business owners be paying attention to?
So with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act expiring, I know that's the main topic, I keep saying it, but it is very relevant to this discussion. So there's a couple of things. there's something called the qualified business income deduction that's available to pass-throughs. And in a nutshell, it's essentially 20% of your income is used as a deduction. So if you made 100 grand from a partnership, in a nutshell, you should get a $20,000 deduction on your personal tax return. That's set to expire. That's a really big thing for pass-through. That was something very attractive for pass-throughs. So the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, and Trump's actually, this is a Trump proposal. He's actually proposing reducing the corporate tax rate, corporate meaning not pass-throughs, actual corporations that have to pay tax, from 21 to 15%. Okay. So corporations have become more attractive. Pass-throughs are becoming less attractive. That definitely could be a consideration for some sort of plan.
Excellent. That's a concise overview. And given that we just covered the proposed corporate tax changes and policies business owners should keep an eye on, let's discuss something a little bit more actionable, like strategies. So against this backdrop, are there specific strategies or business structures you're recommending to help your clients mitigate business tax burdens?
So yeah, there's absolutely strategies to employ here. And it's on a tailored basis. No client is the same when it comes to a strategy, based on just initial talks, essentially. So essentially, things to be done specifically are to maximize your bonus depreciation, right? 2024, it's still 80%. 2025, it'll be 60. 2026, it'll be 40, and so on and so forth. So it would be advantageous with a month and 10 days left in 2024, if you're considering purchasing equipment for your business, it may be smart to do so before 2025. There is also Section 179 that can also be used in place of bonus, and that is not being reduced. So that is another option. I've actually made that change to a couple of our clients' returns. Section 179 is also an accelerated depreciation. It's very, very similar to bonus, where you can take an immediate deduction for the entire purchase price of an asset. So Section 179 is becoming a little more attractive now. It was kind of outshined by bonus because bonus, you know, in a nutshell, had less restrictions. Section 179 had more restrictions. But now, with the bonus being phased out, Section 179 is becoming more and more attractive. It's still at 100%. That's definitely another strategy that I've employed with certain clients. The other one, going back to what we discussed, if Trump makes the corporate tax rate 15% from 21 and removes the QBI deduction from pass-through entities, then perhaps it may be worth putting someone in a C-Corp. I have not done that yet, but just given those facts, that may be a consideration.
Those are some good takeaways. And building on that, changes in tax policy can really influence how business owners think about selling their business or even planning for the future. Strategies that made sense a few years ago might not be as effective next year, and the reverse could also be true. It's definitely a moving target, especially since we won't have all the answers until the new fiscal policies under a Trump administration are finalized. And in the meantime, it's important for business owners to stay agile, particularly when it comes to year-end planning. And I'm curious, Jonathan, for clients that are considering business sales or even succession planning, does the current landscape alter your approach?
Yeah, absolutely. That's mainly going to be capital gains, but there's probably going to be some income tax repercussions there as well. So in a business sale, you're either selling your assets or you're selling your stock, right? You sell your assets, typically you're going to have income tax. You sell your stock, typically you'll have capital gains tax. Both are lower right now under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So I would say we plan on what we know, not what may happen, right? So Trump may reduce capital gains tax, but he may not. We know that the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is going to expire. So I would say probably prudent to sell your business before the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act expires, to benefit, obviously, from the lower capital gains and lower income tax.
Sure. And everyone's financial journey is different. So as that could make sense in one scenario, it could also be vastly different in another. So it's important to evaluate on a case-by-case basis.
Absolutely. Like I said, there's so much uncertainty right now. There's three things going on. We have a current policy, an expiration of the current policy, and a proposed policy from the president-elect. So there's very many ways this can go.
Great. So as we come to a close for today's conversation, it's important to highlight some of the key insights that can truly impact how we approach tax and accounting in a post-election landscape. With so much valuable information shared, there's often a couple key takeaways that resonate the most. So Jonathan, what would you say is the standout aha moment or moments from our discussion that you'd like our listeners to remember going forward?
I can sum it up in three takeaways. There's proactive planning. That's essential. There's a term that says a fool and his money shall soon part ways. And I think planning separates a lot of people from others, right? Adapting to uncertainty and tailoring strategies to your specific facts. As I mentioned, there's no boilerplate strategy that's going to work across the board. Every client is different. The facts are always going to have slight differences to them. So proactive planning, right? Just a couple of quick examples, right? State and local tax, now that Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is going to expire, is no longer limited to $10,000. So, I mean, what does that mean? For high net worth individuals, I'm pretty sure they're paying more than 10 grand in state income tax, state sales tax, or state property tax. That's a huge thing. That's something to be planned for. And then another big one was the investment management and advisory fees are now going to be deductible again on the expiration of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. That's another huge thing. High net worth individuals usually invest with big dollar amounts. Sometimes those fees are high, and it's a shame that we're not able to deduct them. So that's another plus for that. And again, the whole timing thing that we're dealing with right now is uncertainty. As I mentioned, we're in a current policy. This current policy is set to expire. Is it going to be extended? Is Trump going to extend it? In addition to that, is Trump going to impose new policies? So there's so many ways this can go. And there's no magic wand or crystal ball, I guess, to point us somewhat in the right direction. So the most important thing is you got to get with a professional, discuss the strategies that are applicable to your specific facts and not rely on what you heard someone did or this strategy worked for that person. Those are great food for thought and idea stimulation, but you need to discuss with a professional. You know, you wouldn't invest without an advisor. You wouldn't go to court without an attorney. You shouldn't deal with the IRS without a tax expert. So I would say that's the main takeaway here, is if you're concerned, which you should be, with the changes that may take place, get with a tax advisor to discuss your matters.
Fantastic. And that's really all we have here for today, everyone. And thank you very much to Jonathan George from George Citron and Co. CPA for your participation and continued support. I learned a lot from your perspectives, and I want to say a huge thank you to our audience for tuning in to the OPO podcast. On behalf of the UBS O'Leary Partners, I hope you found today's topics impactful, and we're always accessible for questions or a second opinion, especially if you'd like to take a deeper dive into your personal financial scenario before year end. And with that, be on the lookout for future aha moments with future episodes. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.